Can you describe the biological importance of actionable mutations like EGFR exon 20 and HER2?
So when we think about advanced non-small cell lung cancer, much of the story in the last 5 to 10 years has been biomarker testing and looking for actionable targets that might allow us to treat patients with more personalized options. And EGFR and HER2 exon 20 insertion mutations really are now falling into that category of actionable biologic targets. These are both members of the EGFR protein family. They both sit at the cell surface, and when activated by exon 20 insertion mutations, activate downstream signaling that promotes tumor cell survival. Using a targeted agent, either EGFR or HER2 targeted in these cases, can improve patient outcomes and offer potential for therapeutic efficacy.
How do you test for these mutations, and when do you test?
So for EGFR and exon 20 insertions, the optimal way to find these mutations is through a next-generation sequencing panel. This is a broad biomarker testing panel that will catch these mutations and others. And when we find these results, certainly exon 20 insertions now have FDA-approved therapies, and HER2 exon 20 insertions do now have off-label treatment options in lung cancer. So both are potentially actionable. These HER2 mutations are actually a great example of why it's so important to do next-generation sequencing, because they may not be found in individual single gene-based panels because they're not yet considered actionable in the form of FDA-approved therapies. But next-generation sequencing panel will catch them. And same with exon 20 insertions. You know, PCR-based testing will catch the more common EGFR mutations like exon 19 deletions, L858R, maybe T790M, but they're not likely to catch an exon 20 insertion. So that's why doing a broad panel is so important. Now, we really want to test all patients with advanced or metastatic non-small cell lung cancer with adenocarcinoma histology for these sorts of biomarkers. But even for patients with squamous histology, you may want, in selected patients, to think about doing testing for these mutations. So for example, a young patient, a patient without use of history of tobacco use or with more minimal tobacco use history may benefit from doing an NGS panel, even with squamous histology. Or a patient with a small sample or mixed histology, again, at a very low threshold to think about adding NGS testing and hoping of finding something actionable.
What is the incidence of EGFR exon 20 insertions in non-small cell lung cancer?
So for EGFR exon 20 insertions, these make up the minority of EGFR mutations that we find. So you should say about 85% of EGFR mutations will be one of the common mutations of exon 19 deletions or L858R, but maybe 5 to 10% will be these exon 20 insertion mutations. When you look at the broader lung adenocarcinoma population, that means that up to 1 to 2% of patients just overall will have an exon 20 insertion in EGFR. And when you compare this to the spectrum or the activity of other potentially or known to be actionable targets, this is actually a very meaningful fraction of our patients. That's why it's so important to make sure that when you're doing broad biomarker testing, that you include all possible actionable biomarkers, including these exon 20 insertion mutations.
Can you speak about targeted therapeutic strategies available for patients with an exon 20 insertion? What is under investigation?
For EGFR exon 20 insertion positive lung cancer, it's been a very exciting last year where we've had not one, but two FDA approvals of targeted therapy options. The first was with a drug called amivantamab, which is an EGFR-MET bispecific antibody. And this is a distinct mechanism of drug that we often see in lung cancer these days. And this antibody likely works in a number of different ways to target these exon 20 positive cells. It binds to the extracellular domain of both EGFR and MET, both of which have the ability to activate downstream survival signaling pathways in tumor cells. Likely functions through blocking of ligand binding, promoting receptor internalization and degradation, as well as potentially through immunologic mechanisms. Now, the other drug they've had approved in the last year for exon 20 insertions is mobocertinib. This works by a different mechanism. It's a small molecule inhibitor, which is able to bind to this exon 20 mutated lung cancer. And for EGFR with exon 20 insertions, developing these small molecule inhibitors with an appropriate balance of efficacy and tolerability has been more challenging than what we've seen for our more commonly seen EGFR mutations. And this is in part because the binding site and the kinase of these exon 20 insertion positive cells is very similar to wild type EGFR in its affinity for ATP, therefore creating drugs that will bind to the mutated form of the protein and give anti-tumor efficacy while minimizing binding to the wild type form of the protein, which is what creates many of the common classic EGFR toxicities like skin rash or diarrhea. It's been a little more challenging. Mobocertinib has sufficient specificity between these two that we're able to get efficacy at acceptable tolerability profile. It does mean that these drugs work very differently as well. So resistance to one doesn't necessarily mean there's resistance to other. And therefore, they can be used in sequence when you're thinking about treating patients.
Can you touch on recent clinical trial data from some of these targeted agents that target exon 20 insertions?
Mobocertinib's approval for exon 20 insertion positive lung cancer was based on cohorts from the large multi-cohort Casala study. This is a study that looked at both dose escalation and dose expansion, a number of different biomarker-driven lung cancer populations. But the approval we'll talk about today really focuses on the cohorts which looked at EGFR exon 20 insertion positive lung cancer treated after prior exposure to platinum-based chemotherapy, so after prior standard therapy. And when we looked at the outcomes of these patients, they saw that the overall response rate or objective response rate was about 40%, the disease control rate or clinical benefit rate of 74%. And the majority of patients had some degree of numerical decrease in overall disease burden. When we looked over time on durability of response, the median PFS was 8.3 months on this drug. And this activity profile, of course, is one of the things that has underlied the FDA approval of the drug. Now, these clinical trials, when you look at safety, also show some distinct adverse events. So amivantamab is both an EGFR and MET targeted antibody, can cause both traditional EGFR-related toxicities, like rash or diarrhea, and also traditional MET-related toxicities, most possibly things like peripheral edema or reduction in the serum albumin. And as an antibody, it does have a distinct toxicity where patients can have infusion reactions. And these actually occur in the majority of patients. About two-thirds of patients will have a reaction to their amivantamab infusion. Now, the good news is that this is by far most common in the first dose. 94% will happen in the first dose, and almost all will happen within the first two doses. So if you look out past cycle two, under 0.1% of patients will have a subsequent infusion reaction. And this has led to a more unique dosing schedule where the first few doses are more fractionated, they're given through a peripheral line, and they're given with pre-medication to try to reduce the risk of more serious infusion reactions. But it does mean if you're managing a patient on this drug, that you wanna be prepared to have methods in place to handle infusion reactions if they do occur. Now, mobocertinib, our other FDA-approved agent right now for exon 20 positive lung cancer, was also studied in a very similar multi-arm study design. And this was a dose escalation, dose expansion study where they similarly looked at the cohort of patients with the same population, so exon 20 insertion positive and prior platinum-based chemotherapy treatment, so after prior standard therapy. And they pulled these cohorts from two different studies, one the prior platinum pretreated cohort, so PPP cohort, and one the exclaim extension cohort. So if you read the literature on this, you'll see reference to both these populations, literally the same sort of patient demographics underlying them. And in this study, response rates, if you look at objective response rates by independent committee, run around 25 to 28%, depending which cohort or study you're looking at. And the PFS median was 7.3 months. So also clinically active. Now we don't have a study that directly compares these two drugs head to head, but based on this data, mobocertinib also now has an FDA approval for exon 20 insertion positive lung cancer. We think about toxicities of mobocertinib. These are a little more classic EGFR exon 20 insertion inhibitor toxicities. Most classically, those wild type EGFR toxicities like skin rash, paronychia, and particularly diarrhea. And in fact, more than 90% of patients who get mobocertinib will have some degree of diarrhea, and 21% will have grade 3 or higher. So for this drug, it's really important to be educating your patients about how to best manage diarrhea as a symptom so that they can successfully, you know, have this under control and be able to continue appropriate dose intensity. Now, there are other drugs in development, and perhaps I'll highlight There are a number of different small molecule inhibitors in development for exon 20 insertion positive lung cancer. And these are often attempting to do things like increase potency, increase selectivity against wild type EGFR, or potentially add a possibility of CNS activity. So this is a real unmet need for our current therapeutic options for these patients. And the number of these are out there and have clinical data. I'll highlight a few. So poziotinib is one of the original small molecule EGFR inhibitors for exon 20. This is being studied in ongoing multi-cohort Zenith 20 study. And this includes arms looking at second-line or later therapy, looking at first-line therapy, both for EGFR and HER2-positive disease, and looking at variations in dosing structure. A number of the original cohorts on this drug used once-daily dosing, and there have been challenges related to toxicities thus far, which have required a lot of dose reductions. There are some indications in the Zenith 20 study that perhaps doing a twice-daily dosing schedule may improve drug tolerability, and I think we're all waiting to see more prospective data as it comes out on that. At this year's ASCO, a number of the other small molecule inhibitors were also evaluated, and I'll highlight CLN-081 and EZD-9008. These both have FDA breakthrough therapy designations and have shown clinically meaningful response rates with promising toxicity profiles. I think also more to come as we get more data back long-term on these drugs.
Can you touch on targeted therapeutic strategies available for patients with HER2 mutations? And what is under investigation in this space?
So HER2 exon 20 insertions have also been a very exciting area in lung cancer in the recent months and years. And HER2 overexpression has been a known therapeutic target in a number of different diseases like breast cancer or gastric cancers or other GI malignancies. But in lung cancer, has not yet been a widespread target. In the last years, you've seen increasing availability of active drugs with good data off-label for lung cancer. I'll talk through a few of those. So our original strategy in lung cancer with a HER2 exon 20 insertion mutation had been to try to use small molecule HER2 inhibitors that were available off the shelf. And some that come to mind are afatinib, which is both an EGFR and HER2 inhibitor, or neratinib or lapatinib. But these all had disappointing response rates for HER2 exon 20 positive lung cancer. Subsequently, TDM1 or trastuzumab emtansine, a HER2-directed ADC with a microtubule inhibitor payload became available. And this drove a lot of interest because we were now starting to see clinically meaningful responses. And in a smaller phase 2 study, we saw response rates up to around 44%, PFS around 5 months. And that was very promising. We thought about how can we bring these sort of therapies to our patients with HER2 exon 20 positive lung cancer. Now, more recently, we've seen additional ADCs developed, particularly trastuzumab deruxtecan, which is an ADC with a modified design and payload, which has offered even higher degrees of activity when studied prospectively in lung cancer. This is a trend we've seen more broadly in lung cancer, where we're now seeing these antibody drug conjugates directed against a number of different targets, starting to show clinical activity for our patients.
Can you comment on recent clinical trial data from some of these HER2 targeted agents?
So there are two studies that I would highlight when you think about antibody drug conjugates for HER2 exon 20 insertion positive non-small cell lung cancer. We'll talk about the data for trastuzumab emtansine, also called TDM1. We'll talk about the data for trastuzumab deruxtecan, which is our newer HER2 directed ADC, which is data both in breast cancer and in lung cancer now. So first, trastuzumab emtansine. This was studied in a smaller phase 2 study where they looked at 18 patients with exon 20 insertion positive or 2 exon 20 insertion positive lung cancer. And they showed an objective response rate of 44% and a PFS of 5 months. And this drove uptake of off-label use of this agent for these patients with this sort of biomarker-driven lung cancer. Now, I will note that this is not HER2 amplification, and we currently are not using HER2 IHC status in lung cancer to drive practice in the clinic or off-label practice. Now, more recently, in the last few years, the DESTINY-Lung01 study has been run, and this is a study looking at a newer HER2 antibody drug conjugate, trastuzumab deruxtecan, for HER2 exon 20 positive lung cancer. So how does trastuzumab deruxtecan differ from trastuzumab emtansine? They're both antibody drug conjugates. They both target HER2, but they differ in their payload. So the deruxtecan drug, trastuzumab deruxtecan, has a topoisomerase 1 inhibitor payload. It also has a higher ratio of drug to antibody, which may drive how much payload can be delivered to the tumor cells themselves. And it has a distinct linker design where it's a cleavable linker, which can increase bystander effects to neighboring cells in tumors where there may be patchy cell surface expression of HER2. So this drug has been studied in lung cancer in the DESTINY-Lung01 study. This was enrolled patients with previously treated HER2-positive lung cancer. And they had cohorts both for HER2-amplified and HER2 exon 20 insertion. And we'll really focus on the exon 20 insertion patients here today. And then treated them with this antibody drug conjugate every 3 weeks until progression of the primary endpoint of objective response rate. And this showed increased activity. So response rate was 55%, again, compared to the low to mid 40% with the T-DM1, and a PFS of 8.2 months, about 3 months out from what we saw, again, with T-DM1. So this drug has been more active as now supplanted T-DM1 as our preferred sort of go-to off-label HER2-targeted drug in lung cancer. This does not currently have any FDA approvals in this space, but it may be possible to obtain off-label, usually used in a second line or later setting after standard therapy. These drugs can be very well tolerated. Their most common side effects have to do with the fact that they are still chemotherapy payload. So GI toxicities, alopecia, cytopenias can all come up. Also highlight in the DESTINY-Lung01 study, there was a reasonably high rate of ILD. And when this was adjudicated by an independent committee, 26% of patients had some grade of ILD. So this is a side effect to be aware of if you're treating patients with this drug and to have a low threshold of suspicion for new respiratory symptoms to continue to consider imaging and further evaluation. That does mean that for HER2 exon 20 positive lung cancer, right now our go-to first treatment still is standard platinum doublet-based therapy. But then when we look into the second line and later setting, you can use other standard therapies, you can look for clinical trials ideally, but if not, you're looking for off-label HER2 ADC therapy, in my book, preferentially with trastuzumab deruxtecan, is a very reasonable option as well.